The Life Story of Anna Maria Isaacson Whiting, The Matriarch, by Geraldine Brown Sagers. Note by the author. This is the story of Grandma Whiting, told simply and effectively as she remembered it, as she looked back over the years of life beginning with her childhood days. I spent years listening to Grandmother tell the various things which are told here. To me they have become so familiar that I sometimes forget that all of the grandchildren may not be as well acquainted with the many episodes and experiences as I am. I am sure it took months to take all this down. Grandma and I worked on it most of the summers, while I was in college and teaching. I would follow her around and ask questions, and then try to write down what she told me. Later I would write questions and she or Aunt Min would write the answers back. The last letter I got from Grandma with any information for her life story on it was written in 1943. She was living in California with Aunt Min. At the end of her letter she wrote, "Dear Geraldine, I'm afraid you can't make much sense out of this, but I'll be glad to do all or anything to help you. Maybe all this won't be interesting to anybody, but maybe somebody will want to read it sometime. I feel it my duty as well as pleasure to assemble this material together, to tell the story of Anna Maria Isaacson Whiting, who is indeed the matriarch to her family." End of author's note. The first thing that I can remember was seeing my mother, Martha Isaacson, very sick on her bed. She was in such pain that she could not stand. I was there alone in the house with her and it was night, and I was very scared. My father and my brother Ike, who was 7 years old then, had gone to look for two of our best milk cows. We were afraid the Indians had driven them off, and we didn't know how long they would be gone to hunt for them. I was just 4 years old and Mother was worried about me, because I was really just a baby. She kept talking to me to see if I was all right. Finally she called me over to her bed, and asked me if I thought I could go over to Sister Shoals, and ask her to come over and help her. I told her I could. I had gone there lots of times in the daytime. It wasn't very far. Mother told me to get my shawl. No, we didn't wear coats. We just wrapped a shawl around us when we went out, and if it was cold we put it up around our heads. I got my shawl and went to the door. Mother called me back and asked me again if I was sure I could make it. She told me to hurry. She didn't need to tell me to hurry as I would have anyway. She looked so sick. I was half scared to death. I got outside and looked all over for Father and Ike. I looked up and down the street to see if any horses and wagons or buggies were coming. I walked out to the road and started across, but the road was as slippery as could be. I fell down and got up and started again and fell down again. I felt I had taken my life in my hands. If some horses came down the road I couldn't run to get out of the way, as I might fall down and they would run over me, so I got down and crawled all the way across the road. It surely seemed a lot farther to the shoals than it did in the daytime. I got up and ran as soon as I was off the road. When I got there I knocked on the door but no one came, so I knocked harder and harder. Finally one of the shoals boys opened the door a little and when he saw me he said, "Hello, Maria, are you lost?" I just said, "Please, my mother says to tell your mother, can she come over to our place quick?" Sister Shoals came to the door and said to come in as I must be frozen. She straightened my shawl and asked me what I wanted. I told her again, and she asked why Father or Ike hadn't come. When I told her they were gone to look for the cows, she went and got her shawl right away. I was sure glad to see her putting on that shawl, because I knew that meant she would come. We stepped outside, she put her shawl around her head, and took hold of my hand, and we went home real fast. We got home and Mother seemed sicker than ever. She didn't even look at us when we first got in. I was surely glad Sister Shoals was there. She took off her shawl and went right over to Mother. Mother seemed to feel better after a little while, and asked Sister Shoals to put me to bed. Sister Scholes took me on her lap, and asked me if I was warm yet, then told me that Mother would be all right now. I felt like crying, but I didn't. I should say not. I wouldn't let her see a big girl like me cry. She put me to bed and I felt warmer all settled down in my feather mattress. We always used feather mattresses. Some of the people used straw, but neither Mother or Father would think of using anything but feathers. Anyway, I thought I would stay awake until Father came, and then I knew everything would be all right. I must have been too sleepy, because the next thing I knew Ike was shaking me, and telling me to wake up. I woke up and saw it was light. Ike said, "Guess what Mother has? A little baby. A boy. Come and see it, Mariah." I ran in the other room and Sister Scholes was holding the baby on her lap. She held the baby up for me to see and he looked so little. Sister Scholes pinned a shawl around his feet and handed him to Father and said, "Well, Brother Isaacson, I reckon I might as well go home for a spell. Your wife's asleepin' and the baby's fit and fine. I'll run back over later and see if I can help out." Sister Scholes wasn't a midwife, but she sure helped a lot of women when their babies were born. I remember when I got older that she always seemed to be going around to help women who most of the time couldn't get a regular midwife. Father thanked her for coming over and told her he didn't know what would have happened if she hadn't come. She reached down, patted me on the head and said, "Just be glad this little might come over to fetch me." She didn't come any too soon, either. After she had gone, Father patted my head and smiled at me. He looked at the baby and smiled. Ike and I stood there watching him. I sure felt good and I was so glad to have a new baby. I had always wanted one. I loved that little brother from the day he was born. I wasn't lonesome ever anymore. From then on I had Martin to play with. The next thing I remember happened just a little later in the year after our baby was born. One day I was playing outside with some of the other kids and somebody started yelling that the Indians were driving off the cattle. All the men ran to get their guns and started to go after them to see if they couldn't scare them off. Us kids all wanted to see, but we didn't dare to follow after the men. Some of the kids started climbing upon Scholes' house, as it had a flat roof and they could get on a box and climb up there and sit to watch. I was too little to get up and I was bawling and yelling for Ike to help me when one of the men came running by. He stopped and lifted me to the top of the house and said, "There, little one, look, and don't forget, but someday they won't dare come." Ike and the older children knew the cattle and they could tell which ones they were taking. They had the same two cows that Father and Ike had hunted so long for just a while before. They had three more of ours and six of the Scholes and all of the Jensens and Petersons, and lots of other peoples. They didn't get any of the Whites or Andersons, as they had been running their cows on the other side of town for about 2 weeks. The men stared the Indians and a few of the cows that couldn't keep up were left behind, but they ran away with most of them and we didn't ever see them again. We always worried for fear the Indians would attack us. They had trouble and bloodshed for a good many years in San Pete County. When the grasshoppers were bad and Ephraim, my father fixed a wagon box on two wheels and put a cover on it for a chicken coop, which he could move around the fields. The nests were in the front end and I would stand on the tongue and reach them. One day I discovered a new nest in the further end of the wagon box. Right now I crept in and crawled back to get the eggs. When I got back, my weight made the wagon box tip back. I was in the back end and the front end was up, so all I could see was the sky. I felt like I was ruined and didn't know whether they would find me that night or not. I thought that was the narrowest escape anyone could have. I was all dirty too. I scratched and scratched until I got far enough back up to the front so I tipped the wagon box straight again. That was one experience I never forgot. Father raised many potatoes. He kept them in a huge pit, which opened at the top and had a ladder down into the top. Many a day I would sit all day, sprouting potatoes down in this pit all alone. We fed potatoes to our pigs and cows. We also raised peas, so many that we threshed them with a thresher, and fed our pigs and cows on them too. We were very lucky to have such good gardens, and raise so much for feed for our cattle. The only chance we had to get anything ahead was on what we could raise. When I wasn't very old, I went to Manti, to visit my father's cousins. They teased mother to let me come up and visit for a week or two. I was crazy to go. After I had been there a few days, I was so homesick I could hardly wait to get home. When President Young would come to conference, all the Sunday school kids would get out and march to meet him. The people would always have a big banquet. Everybody had to donate and they would put on all the airs they could. President Young told the people not to do that, but they went on and got a big dinner just the same. When everyone got ready to eat, President Young sat down and took some of all the food they passed to him. He then stirred all the food together on his plate and shoved it to one side and asked them to bring him a bowl of bread and milk. President Young didn't want things that were unnecessary. I was not there when this happened. I just heard others tell about it. When I was 12 years old, my father was called to Arizona. I felt so terrible that I couldn't get over it. When my father talked in church, I bawled. He said, "I felt as though I couldn't stand to start out this time of the year. It was in February with my family, because I saw so much suffering and so many deaths while crossing the plains in early days. But now President Young has told me that I could go without my family until we get a fort built to protect ourselves from the Indians." Father left and I was the saddest kid. I nearly worried myself to death for fear the Indians would kill him. I wanted to go with Father, but I didn't want to leave Mother. Father had gone. There was conference in Manti. Mother let me go. Mother had always dressed me very plain. We made our own clothes, and never had even as much as a ruffle on our dresses, which wasn't necessary. I was visiting with my father's cousin and his family. He had some girls who were older than I was. I was 13 then. They dolled me up and even had me a bow picked out. I went to church in their clothes, dolled up in the best they had, even a hat. I got there early and sat near the front of the church. President Brigham Young was there that day, and I'll never forget the sermon he gave. He pounded the pulpit and said, "We should make our own clothing and our own hats. We should learn to work and keep busy." He also said that he didn't want to live to see what terrible troubles and destruction we would have to go through if we didn't try to hold our standards and not simply follow the styles. I felt so out of place there in my borrowed clothes that I never forgot that sermon. If I hadn't heard that, I might have been more anxious to keep up with the styles. I would have got out of there, but the house was jammed and I had to stay still. Father came back at the end of the first year and got a load of wheat from his own bins, some that he had stored. He had it made into flour and took it back to Arizona. He had a big trail outfit. He left us again because there was nothing ready in Arizona. We had heard that Father was coming. I would climb upstairs in the new house, which wasn't finished yet, to watch for him. One day I saw a trail outfit coming a long ways down the road. I sat and watched and wished that might be him. Finally he turned to come our way and was I happy. We stayed there another year, but I went back with Father and that left just Mart, Mother and I. My job was to milk the cows, 5 or 6 of them. Mart fed the cows, watered them, and cleaned the stalls. In the morning, after I had milked, I had to go to school and do the janitor work. I was working to pay for my school. I had to sweep the floor and dust the big long benches and tables. I attended school about 3 months each year up to the 3rd grade. Father was called to go to Arizona just as he had almost finished building our new rock house. Our old one was quite small. We left the new house as it was. 20 years later, when Father and Mother moved back, they finished the house and moved into it. The next year, Father and the others in Arizona raised a good crop of wheat, so he came back to get us. I was 14 years old then. Everything was exciting getting ready to leave, and I was going with my family, so I don't think I worried too much about leaving Ephraim. I was young and anxious to see the things Father talked about. He had told us so much about Sunset and Brigham City when he was home the year before that I was anxious to go down there. Besides, with Ike and Father gone, it was lonesome there in Manti. I could hardly believe that at last we were getting ready to go to Arizona. It took us quite a while to get all our things ready. Father had over 50 head of cattle. Mother had a good team of oxen and Father had a team of mules. They were so mean and ornery to drive but sure could pull. We were to travel with a big outfit. Brother Jensen from Manti was going, and he had about as many cattle as we did. Then the church was sending a thresher down to Arizona to thresh the wheat, so there were more wagons and people going to help with that. There were at least 15 wagons when we got ready to go. Of course, we were always glad for a larger number to travel with. It was so much safer. I know how hard it was for Mother to leave her friends and family to go way down to Arizona. She dreaded it. She was always homesick for her brother and sister in Ephraim. I knew I would miss my cousins, too. I had such a few that the ones I did have always seemed special. I did enjoy going to visit them. I wondered when I would ever see Mary and Lizzie and Parley Christensen again. Of course, it was hard to leave. It was hard to leave any place where you have a home, family, and friends. We couldn't let that stop us. Father had been called to go to Arizona by the church authorities, so we went. Our trip down there was so slow because we had to drive the cattle. We had to lay over a day or two when we got to watering places. Most of the time, I rode a horse and helped Ike and some of the others drive the cattle. I drove Mother's team sometimes and Father's when it was necessary. Poor Marty had a toothache most of the way down, it seemed. There wasn't much we could do for him. He rode in the wagon when it was bad. Mother and I slept in the wagon and Father and the boys outside. One night Mart had a toothache so bad that Mother said he would have to sleep in the wagon with her. I had to sleep on the ground, in Father's bed. Earlier that same day, an old German fellow, named Schwartz, had broken down. He stopped to fix his wagon, but the rest of the company went on. Well, when he got his wagon fixed, he had come on as fast as he could to catch up with the rest of the company. No one wanted to travel alone. Old Schwartz came into camp real late and rather than bother to get his things out, he came over and crawled into bed with Father. Of course, he was on the other side of Father, but was I ever mad? I didn't sleep much the rest of the night. The main thing that worried me was the fear that someone would see him before I could get out of there and tease me about sleeping with old man Schwartz. One night in southern Utah, one of our best oxen disappeared. Father and Ike went back to look for it. Of course, the rest of us went on. Father had me drive his team of mules. The whole company couldn't stop. I had to stand on the wagon tongue because I couldn't reach the brakes unless I did. I'll say we needed brakes. There were no roads. The way was rough in some places. We crossed the Sevier River over 20 times. Some places, I don't know how we made it without tipping over. Father and I hunted all day for the steer and couldn't find him. They finally gave up and came back to follow the wagon road and the steer stood right there in the road. Boy, were we ever thankful that night. Probably the hardest part of the trip was when we crossed the Colorado River at Lee's Ferry. I crossed that river 9 times on the ferry and never got over my fear of it. Father had to help with the cattle, so I had to drive his wagon and team. We crossed on the ferry all right, but the hardest part was the trip up Lee's Backbone, a mountain on the other side. It was all I could do to hold on to those mules. Mother was afraid every minute I would tip over and be killed. Years later, when I went back to Utah and saw Mother for the last time, she didn't know me at first. Father said, "This is Mariah." Mother said, "Oh, no, Mariah was killed when we went to Arizona." Of course, it wasn't all hard. Some of the time, we had fun. Every night we were around the campfire, we had singing and playing and sometimes dancing. I loved to dance. Mother couldn't understand why. Of course, when she was a young girl, things had been so much different. We were 3 months on the way before we finally reached Brigham City. It seemed good to be there where we could settle down. Yes, we knew we would be living a new way of life here. The United Order wasn't easy. But I was young and I didn't worry about the problems of it. I had a lot of fun. Father was first counselor to Brother Lot Smith. He was head over all the farms. We all ate together in one big room. We sat at the head table, because Father was a counselor. All of us took turns helping in the big kitchen. When the women were sick and couldn't work their turn, they would come and get me to work for them. Mother would get so mad, because she thought I was sporting with all the men over there. I'd run so fast the men couldn't catch me. The women could, though. I had half a dozen women propose to me to marry their husbands. There were lots of nice young people there in Brigham. The folks didn't want me to go out with any of the boys, as I was too young. My best friends were Money Bates Jolly and Roxy Ballard. I never had a sister, but Money was like one to me. Author's note: just a year or so before Grandma Whiting died, Sister Money Bates Jolly came to see her. I happened to be there and I'll never forget that visit. Grandma had been gone to California for quite a while, so they hadn't seen each other for some time. Both were so crippled and lame they had to be helped almost every step. When we helped Grandma into the front room and she saw who was there, they both looked at each other and started to laugh. They threw their arms around each other and laughed until the tears rolled down their cheeks. For the next few minutes, they were as young as they had ever been. I wish I had a recording of all the memories which were relived in that visit. I remember that Grandma told Sister Jolly that she had always been as dear to her as though she had been her own sister. End of author's note. Mother never did like to eat at the big table. She wasn't too well part of the time, and the food didn't agree with her. When she wasn't able to go to the table, I would carry some food home to her. There was always work to be done. Mother was never idle a minute. She knitted our socks and pieced quilts, corded wool and gleaned wheat whenever she could. One thing she could never stand to see go to waste was the wheat left in the fields after the threshing was done. Many times, the wheat she gleaned came in very handy, too. Once when we first lived in Arizona, we went to conference in Bush Valley Alpine. We took a little keg of water with us on the side of the wagon to drink. We had a little bucket with a sharp edge that we used to drink from. The top came off the keg and Pa had me out to help fix it when we stopped. Pa was pulling so hard the top came out and hit me and bloodied my nose, and he laughed. I failed to see anything funny. In the afternoon, I got out and Pa was drinking out of the little bucket I handed him with a sharp edge. I stepped upon the hub of the wheel and hit the bucket with my head accidentally. It cut Pa's mouth so hard it bled quite badly. I just had to laugh, but Pa didn't for a little while, then we both really did laugh. We had lots of fun there, and I was glad we had come to Brigham City. Of course, the special thing at Brigham City was that I met Edwin there. Charles Whiting and his family had been living there, and had gone up to Utah to visit his folks. When he came back, he brought his mother and brothers and sister May with him. May had been sick and they felt the climate in Arizona might help her. When all that big bunch came, they gave them the schoolhouse to live in. A big social was planned to welcome them. I had already heard all about the family from Money and Roxy. they had found out all the boys' names from Verona. That night at the dance, I was sitting by Jim Curtis and his niece. His niece had been so homesick that he was trying to interest her in something so she would stay there. Jim said to his niece, "Say, if I were you, I would set my cap for that curly-headed young feller over there by the fireplace." Of course I looked him over, too, and that was the first time I ever saw Edwin. Next day, I went to go out of the big dining room just as he came in, and he moved away to let me go by, and I moved at the same time to let him go by. Then he laughed a little and let me out. That was the second time I saw Edwin. I didn't dare let the folks think I was interested in him. We saw each other 3 times a day, but it was always at meal times, and I had to sit up at the head table with Father, and Edwin's family were the last ones who had come, so they sat at a little table way over in the corner. Edwin just came to help move his mother down, but he said that after he met me, he didn't want to go back. When Edwin found out that my name was Anna Maria, he said that was Danish and he was English, so he would call me Maria. A few times, we walked across the fort together. I liked the dances to come, because he would always dance with me. Mother and father had always said that I had to go with the first one who asked me to the dance, or I couldn't go. Well, this one dance came along, and the first one who asked me was a man who already had 2 wives. I didn't dare refuse him, as he would tell my folks. So I had to accept and tell Edwin, when he asked me, that I couldn't go with him. When the night of the dance came, I waited and waited, but the man didn't come for me. I was mad. I wasn't going alone after I had told everyone I had a date and I wasn't going to stay home. Finally, I got on my things and went over to that man's house. He was in there with his 2 wives. I walked in and asked him if he wasn't ready to take me to the dance. He grabbed his coat and said that he had forgotten about taking me to the dance. After we got outside, he told me he hadn't really forgotten, but he didn't know how to tell his wives and he couldn't get them to hurry so he could take them first and then come back for me. He took me to the dance and then went back for his wives. Sunset Ward was having a big dance one time, and invited all of us from Brigham City over to it. There was a whole group going, so the folks let me go. We went over in a wagon and we had a good time. After it was over, Edwin asked me to walk home with him instead of going back on the wagon. I was afraid of what Mother would say, but not afraid enough but that I walked with him. It wasn't very far, about 1.5 miles. After we got home, we were standing by the fort gate talking. I told Edwin I had enjoyed coming home with him. He said, "How would you like to take a longer trip with me clear up to St. George? That's where the temple was." I said I didn't know what the folks would say. Edwin said, "Well, we can find out, can't we?" Just about that time, I heard Mother. She lived right by the fort gate, and she had come out to see why I wasn't home yet. Believe you me, I got inside in a hurry. Not long after that, there was a conference in Joe City. There were a bunch of the young folks going, and Mother and Father let me go as Edwin's partner. I really enjoyed that day. That was about the first time I had ever been away from my folks, except to visit cousins a few times. My father wouldn't mistreat anyone, but he thought Edwin was lazy. When I was going with him, Father said that if I did marry that boy, I would have to help make the living. Finally, I found out why. One day, Father and Brother Plum had been working in the fields and they saw Edwin come across the farm and pass right by a cow that was in the garden. He didn't even try to drive it out. They really figured that was the height of laziness. I asked Edwin about it, and he said he didn't even see the old cow. He was busy thinking about something else. One day, Edwin came to our house. Mother had gone to the field, but I expected her back any minute. I didn't know what she would say if she found Edwin there, and I didn't want to find out. I was scared. Edwin wasn't afraid of Mother. He thought she was reconciled to the idea of us going together. He said he wouldn't leave until I gave him a kiss. He didn't know what a terror my mother was. I knew she would raise the deuce and kick him out of there if she came before he left. I was afraid she would forbid me to ever go with him again. Edwin hadn't been around Mother much, so he wasn't worried. I tried to get him to leave, but he wouldn't leave. I was expecting Mother any minute, so I finally gave him a little peck of a kiss and rushed him out the door to get rid of him. Yes, that was our first kiss. I stayed clear of him as much as I could because I was between two fires, but Edwin just wouldn't be run off. I can't begin to tell you all the things that happened to me in Brigham City. It was such a different experience. To the parents and older folks, it was probably a lot of trials and worries. A dam was being built to help provide water for our crops and farms. The only trouble was that we could never depend on the Little Colorado River. One year there would be very little water, and then the next, when the people just had the dam built in and thought everything was fixed, there would be such big floods that it would wash the dam out in just a few hours. Also, in that part of the country the soil was quite sandy, and it was hard to make any kind of dam hold in the river. We didn't have the big machines and all that they have now to build dams. We only had our men and horses to haul and scrape in the dirt and rocks. All the years we lived there, the most important thing was whether the next dam would hold. It was quite a different experience to the young people. We all liked eating at the big table and the dances and parties that were held for everyone. We had our friends, and working with them was like a big picnic all the time. Of course, it was easier for the girls than the boys. The boys all wanted to get something of their own. They weren't content to just stay there and work for their food and clothes. We knew how some of the young men felt, and it made the older people feel so bad. I was 15 years old when Edwin first proposed to me. He was 21. I knew when I first became acquainted with him there was no one else for me. My folks thought that I was too young to fall in love. They didn't like the idea of me going with a young fellow who wasn't tried and tested. Both mother and father thought it would be better for me to marry some older man who had already proved himself, had a wife or two, and was ready to provide for his families. That was my big problem. Edwin wasn't convinced that Mother would never let us get married. He didn't know my mother like I did. A trip was being planned to go back to Utah for more provisions. We did not have enough food nor other things without going for more grain and supplies. Father and Ike were going, and my folks decided that it would be a good thing if I went too. They said I could see my cousins and friends back in Utah. I knew that they were just sending me away so that I would forget about Edwin and maybe find someone else in that much time. Of course, I knew I wouldn't, and I told Edwin. He seemed to be hurt to think my folks were sending me off. Edwin had come to Arizona just to help his mother and younger children move down and see if it would help May's heart. He said he had never intended to stay. He had planned on going right back to Springville just as soon as possible, but that after meeting me he didn't want to leave. Now I was the one who was going back to Utah. To make matters worse, Will Adams was going along with his father. Brother Adams was the other counselor in the bishopric with father, and so the Adams family always sat by ours at the big table. Will was really swell and so conceited. I did like to dance with him, as he was a very good dancer. The hardest thing I had to do was to tell Edwin that I was going. He began to see for the first time how hard it was to convince my mother that I was old enough to be getting serious with anyone. Edwin and I did manage to have a little time to talk about things before I left. At first Edwin was mad, then just hurt to think that my folks would do such a thing as send me off just to get me away from him. I couldn't say much, because I didn't know when my mother would ever change her mind. One thing Edwin asked me to do. I promised that I wouldn't go to a dance with Will Adams while I was on the trip. I promised, but I didn't know then how hard it would be to keep that promise. It made me mad every time I thought of it all the way. When we got to Utah and stopped in one of the little towns, they had a dance for us. Will asked me to go, and I had to tell him I wasn't going. No one else asked me, and I had to stay home from that dance. I was so mad. I just loved to dance, and the thoughts of missing one in a brand new place just made me boil. I sneaked over to the dance after the others were all there and looked through the window for a while, but I didn't dare go in. Only my brother Ike knew how I felt about Edwin and sympathized with me. When we had been gone a few weeks, he asked me if I had written to Edwin yet, and I told him no. When he asked why, I told him that mother and father sent me away thinking I'd forget him. They would never let me marry him anyway. We came home about 4 months later. Things hadn't changed for me nor for Edwin. We managed to see each other 3 times a day, at least. When we had our meals, we always got to say a few words in spite of everything. But conditions at the fort weren't the same. The young people weren't content to stay around and work for a few clothes and food. Edwin and his brother Art got a contract to work in Flagstaff for the railroad. Edwin's brother Eck and my brother Ike went back to Utah to look for work. We hated to see them go. Things were changing fast. Our families weren't together anymore. There was constant unrest and families moving out to go back or move on somewhere else. How hard it was to hold the little settlement together probably never will be realized, except by those in charge. When the dam on the Little Colorado River went out again, the authorities finally told President Lott Smith and Bishop George Lake of Brigham City that the order should be abandoned there. President Smith was the stake president of that stake, so he advised the people to move to Sunset, Joseph City, or Snowflake. They were all just little branches getting started then, and needed more people. Ma moved back to Utah and some of them went to Gila Valley, where there were some more settlements. My father was sent to the Meadows. It was a little place located about 7 miles below the Mexican town of San Juan St. John's, on the Little Colorado. There were a lot of Mexicans and a few Gentiles, as we called them. We heard that the church authorities were calling people to go there to make a settlement and try to build a dam. We were glad. We didn't want to go as far away as Gullah with all the cattle we had to drive, and we had heard awful stories about the heat there. Father was set apart to be bishop of that little ward in 1880. We had been in Arizona about 4 years now. He had used up all his supplies of grain that he had brought from Utah to feed the people at Brigham City. He had no grain left in Utah, as neighbors had borrowed it while he was in Arizona. He had left his home in Utah and had nothing here. He built a one-room log cabin so his family could have shelter. One large field was fenced in by the community, and each family in turn was given 5 acres within that field to farm for himself. This was to be used to obtain their supply of food. That summer we raised quite a crop of melons, corn, beans and other produce. It seemed good. It was good rich soil and there was lots of farming land. But we were still dependent on the winds of the Little Colorado for our water. They tried to build a dam several times, but it never held very much water. It would be a good many years before men would hold back the water of that river safely. There weren't many people at the Meadows, and I miss my friends Roxy Ballard and Money Bates. Later Money moved there with her folks, but I never saw Roxy much after that. The most important things to look forward to were Edwin's visits. He came at Christmas time and then again in the spring. He begged my mother and father to let us get married, but they wouldn't consent as I wasn't 18 yet. I stayed there and helped them all that summer. Mart was there too. He and father built fences and brought down more logs to build a lean-to. I was 18 on the 26th of June. Edwin came up soon after that and my folks finally consented to let us get married. Mother still felt sad. She said I was so young that it was just like one baby having another baby. Father made me feel better, though. He told me that he thought Edwin was as good as any other young fellow they knew. Now that it looked like I was really going to get married, I got busy getting myself a trousseau. I had worked around for a few people to get a little money. Then I went to work for Sister Marcus Peterson when her baby Pearl was born. I liked to tend Brig. He was such a chunk of a baby and so good-natured. I earned $3 a week and worked for her until I had enough to buy muslin for my dress and for the factory to make my garments. I wore my dress after my wedding to the very special dances. Mother used to give me some of the egg money to get extra things for my trousseau. I ordered my things from Montgomery Ward's and they came to Albuquerque by train and on to me by mail. When my material came, I got busy sewing. Of course, we had a sewing machine. Father had traded a horse for one while we lived in Brigham City. He wouldn't let the man have the horse until he taught me how to run that machine. It was the marvel of the Ford, because it sewed so neat and straight, and so fast. I loved that machine from the minute I first saw it work, so I was happy when Father decided to buy it. I packed everything into my trunk as I finished it, and finally I was ready to go. Edwin came for me and we were to meet Sully Richardson and his girl Renee at Woodruff, as they were going with us to be married. We usually planned to travel in the fall, because it wasn't so far between watering holes then, and you could find more good places to stop for camp. The nearest temple was in St. George, Utah. When we met Renee and Sully, they were sick. I guess it was coming up from the different climate in Gullah Valley. They shook all the way with chills and fever. We had to wait on them and tend them all the way. We got to the Little Colorado, where we usually crossed it about 50 miles out of Winslow, and found it was flooded. There was a large group of people waiting there to cross. Among them were two of Edwin's half-brothers, Ray and Roe. They had been working on the railroad. The men decided to hitch all the chains together, swim some horses over with them, then pull the wagons over. All the women were to ride on a wagon of salt that some ranchers were taking out to their cattle, as that was the heaviest wagon and least likely to tip over. Just as they got to our wagon, the chain broke and it went floating downstream. All the men jumped in to help save it. Edwin started to go help, but I grabbed onto him and cried and screamed so loud that he couldn't move. The others pulled it ashore a little farther on down the river, hitched the horses on and pulled it back up in place. We were all standing around talking about how lucky we were, and I said, well, if everyone else had stood on the bank like that dumbbell of an Edwin, we would have lost everything. He was so mad there almost wasn't a wedding after all. We made good time traveling and didn't linger along like we did moving down. We had good horses and went faster. Quite a few people traveled along with us. There were about 10 other wagons in our company going up, but just Sully, Renee, Edwin and I came back. It took us about 3 weeks. When we got to St. George, we rented rooms and Renee and I washed and cleaned all our clothes. That red mud was just the color of the river and you never saw such stuff to get out, especially in white muslin. Finally, we were ready. September 27, 1881, we went to the temple in St. George and received our endowments and were married for time and eternity. It was wonderful. I had never thought we would make it. Edwin and I, Sully and Renee Richardson, began married life with a trip back to Arizona. We enjoyed every minute of it and didn't need any more of a honeymoon than that. It wasn't like it is nowadays. We didn't have to take a special trip. We got to Willow Springs and some people were living there. The man was a friend of Sully's and Edwin's, so they made us stay overnight with them. I will never forget how they tried to make us feel welcome. The man was living there because he had two wives and had to hide out. They had 8 or 10 children. He had built them some little shelters out of the rocks by putting cedars and brush over them. The poor souls had lost their combs, so I gave them mine, and one of the women took the children out behind one of the big rocks to comb their hair. We could hear the poor little ones crying as she combed at the snarls. The other woman was hurrying to get dinner for us. I felt so sorry for one little fellow. He tipped the churn over and there was the deuce to pay. Many times, as we traveled by Willow Springs, I've wondered whatever became of them. Meeting them surely made us appreciate all the things we had. When we got back to Arizona, we bought 1/5 interest in the old fort at Brigham City. We rented some of the houses out. Edwin worked on the railroad. He took the test to be an engineer, but didn't pass because he was colorblind. He worked for John W. Young, one of Brigham Young's grandsons, who was a big contractor there. Edwin had to take credit for most of his pay. The railroad had just come through and there were a lot of people camped in the old fort. The church sold the fort and the boys, Edwin, Uncle Charles, Ike, and Eve bought it. The boys were working teams on the railroad. My brother, Ike, was staying with us. One morning, when they woke up one horse, the best out of each team was gone 3 of ours, and one belonging to some people in Winslow. A little light snow had fallen, and the boys tracked the horses along the side of the road. It was such a desert then and there wasn't much road. After tracking them a little distance, they decided the horses had been stolen and they came back for a few provisions, their guns, and horses so they could search. Uncle Ike, Uncle Eck and Edwin went. They only expected to be gone a day or so, and thought they might even be back that night. Even though the robbers had the best horses and could keep ahead of the boys, they were able to follow them down to the big Colorado River into the Navajo Indian country. The boys were gone for 10 days and I was nearly crazy with worry. Their horses gave out and they couldn't follow the robbers any farther, but they had them hemmed in because of the Colorado River. The boys were nearly starved, because they had just expected to be gone 2 or 3 days at the most. Their horses had given out, so they went to the Indian village and the Navajos gave them something to eat and a blanket to sleep on. They slept with their feet to the fire like the Indians. They hired the Indians to follow the robbers and told them they would give them $100.00 if they would bring back the horses. The old chief sent 3 young Indians and gave them a bow and arrow and 2 guns, one good one that belonged to the boys, and one that failed to go off when they tried to shoot it. He told them not to shoot, unless they had to, but to bring the horses back. They followed the robbers, and tried to get the horses, but the robbers stayed ahead. The Indian with the good gun waited until he could get 2 of the men in range and he killed one, wounded one, and the other gave up. The Indians brought the horses and the 2 men back. We just suffered at home, having never heard a word from them. When they came home, an outfit was just ready to go hunt them. The boys said THZEY had come back to a little store to get provisions, but all we heard was that they had been there. One night they had camped near the robbers. Of course, neither of them built a fire. The boys even got close enough once to see them, but they couldn't catch the robbers because they had their best horses. When they came home, I was sitting in a chair with my head down and I didn't even look up as they came in. I couldn't believe my eyes, because I had about given up and thought they were killed. The Winslow people wanted to hang the robbers, but the boys wouldn't let them. It wasn't like it is now. There were no telephones, and no way to get word around. We couldn't get trials then, and when we did, it would just be Mexicans who were on the juries, and they would never give fair trials anyway. The boys just gave the robbers a little something to eat and told them to get out of the country if they didn't want the Winslow people to hang them. Finally, Edwin started a blacksmith shop and had quite a lot of work there. Then he decided to start a store with the supplies he could get from his holdings in the old fort. We started the store in our home. Edwin, his brother Charles and the others divided up the things that were left, and Edwin came home with his share. The main thing he had was a big box of caps. We had caps to sell for a long time. After we had been married a while, I went up to the meadows to see my folks. Edwin couldn't go as he was working, so I went up with a freighter that was traveling that way. I was surely tickled about the prospects of having a baby. Before the baby was born, I went again to the meadows to visit with my folks. Edwin wouldn't let me stay at Brigham City with only Mrs. Adams as the midwife. Mrs. Bates, at the meadows, wasn't a licensed midwife, but she had surely helped a lot of women. I went over early and stayed there 3 or 4 months before my baby was born. When it finally came time, I had so much trouble they sent Joe Wakefield to St. John's for a Mrs. Ramsey who was a licensed midwife. They didn't get back until early morning. I knew I was terribly sick, and my poor mother thought I was going to die. We were so happy to see the midwife. I had always loved babies, and so I was really thrilled to have one of my own. We lived in Brigham City about 2 years. Eddie was nearly one when we decided to move. When the main body of the people left there, they sold the fort to a man who ran a dairy supplying milk to the people in Winslow. Edwin, his brother Charles, and the Adamses were the main ones left. The Adamses and Charles moved up to Wilford and stayed there until they moved to Mexico. The railroads were through building then, and so everyone moved out of Brigham City. We went to the meadows, where we bought a house that was already completed. It was quite nice. We stayed there until May and Martha were born. We had our own plot of ground and raised good crops most of the time. We experienced a lot of exciting times there. One time, Bob Lee, probably one of the most notorious outlaws in that area, came into St. John's to a celebration. He caused some trouble and the sheriff, who was a Mexican, ran him out of town. They tried to take his gun away but couldn't. When he came by Mother's house, he shot holes in her wash tub. The next morning the Mexicans got up behind the house to catch him. Mother was there alone. Bob got on his little horse and it jumped a big high fence. All those Mexicans were shooting at him. When he got to the river, his pony jumped the river. The Mexicans took after him as hard as they could ride, but when they got to the river their horses wouldn't jump. Bob got off his horse and hid, then he shot one of the Mexicans' pistols out of his hand. This scared the Mexicans and they went back. Bob stayed around there a while and then he went on. Our boys quite liked him. He was just a kid. Of course, he gave the Mexicans and others a bad time for a long while around there. We went to St. John's one day and took some rags up to Sister Shreve's to weave into a rug. She had a big rag carpet 15 yards long. I thought it was just beautiful, but we couldn't afford it. On the way home, I told Edwin about it and how badly I would like to have the carpet. He said we could take $8 out of our tax money if I wanted it badly enough, and we could go back the next day and get it. By the next day, the carpet was gone. I was so disappointed. Of course, I wasn't out anything, as I still had my money. Most people didn't have any rugs at all. We had a few that we had braided. Aunt Sine and Mother helped me, and we saved every little rag we had for a year. I finally got enough to have a carpet woven. A year or so later, we saved enough so that Mother could have one. While we were living at the meadows, we made a trip back to Utah to visit Edwin's folks. My brother, Mart, went with us to go to school in Provo. Edwin's father kept bees and he wanted Edwin to take a swarm back to Arizona with him. He had given all his other boys a swarm. His father was afraid if we took just one swarm it would die. I wrote and asked Mother if she didn't want one, and she sent me $5 to buy it. I wouldn't think of wasting anything, so we brought them on home with us. When we got here, Edwin wouldn't have them on the place, so we put the two swarms over on my father's land. No one went near the bees for months. Edwin was afraid to touch them. Finally, some polygamists came through and one man got some honey out. It tasted so good that we grew braver. He showed Edwin how to extract the honey with valent gloves. Father was interested, so he made the beehives and we bought an extractor and more bees. We had some fine swarms when we sold out to move back to Utah. We even ordered some bees through mail. The honey was a real treat to all of us and we sold all the extra we possibly could. When Martha was a baby, we moved up to St. John's into a house on a lot next to where School District 1 is now. Edwin learned the blacksmith trade, and since there was no smith in St. John's, we were sure there was a good chance for him. I was expecting a new baby, and as usual I was sick to my stomach. I just longed for something in the line of fruit or vegetables. Of course, it was practically impossible to get anything like that in the winter. We raised plenty in the summer, but it didn't keep long. One day a peddler came to town with some canned tomatoes. Never has anything tempted me so much as those tomatoes. When I asked the price, and found that they were about $1 a can, I just knew we could not waste money on frivolous things like that. When Edwin came home, I told him about the peddler and he asked me why I hadn't bought some. I told him I thought they were too expensive. He said they weren't, when I had been as sick as I had. He got on his horse and rode to find the peddler. He came back with 2 cans of those tomatoes, and never had anything tasted that good. I was never quite so sick after that. To this day, a can of tomatoes looks good to me every time I see one. Since Edwin was the only blacksmith, the sheriff would come for him to go to the jail and rivet shackles onto the feet of the prisoners so they could keep them in jail. There were lots of those notorious wild cowboys who came into Arizona from Texas to hide, and they were always having trouble with them around St. John's. One time the sheriff had Edwin come over and rivet one of the outlaws to the door of the jail so he could not get away. I think it was one they called Bill the Kid or Apache Kid. The next morning when the sheriff came, the outlaw had taken the hinges off the door and was gone, door and all. When the outlaws had to bathe and change clothes, Edwin would have to take the rivets off and then put them back on. He always kept a gun handy. Peddlers were always coming around. We depended on them for many supplies that we couldn't get anyplace else. Some had items that were worthless. One peddler came into town after Edwin was doing pretty good with his business. I didn't pay too much attention to what he had, as most of his cloth was cut up into lengths for men's suits. There was a tailor in town, but he charged so much to make a suit that it was cheaper to buy one. This peddler went to Edwin's shop and sold him all the cloth he had for $0.50. When Edwin came over to the house to get the money, I said, "You're not going to take it, are you?" The peddler answered, "He's a man of his word, ain't he?" Edwin gave him the money and he left. I really lit into Edwin for spending all that money for a bunch of cloth like that. He said he thought it was worth the money. I took a piece of cloth and pulled on it a little and it pulled right apart. I asked him how he could make a suit out of that. When Edwin saw how the cloth tore, he was so mad that he went for his gun and was going after the peddler to get his money back. I was quite alarmed then, and I started to cry and stopped him. That surely taught Edwin and I a lesson, and never again was he swindled by a peddler. I always felt a little ashamed that I had made such a fuss, because in the pack was a linen tablecloth that we used for years. It was a real nice one with fringe on, and we used it when we had company. There was a bedspread too that we used for years on our bed. Years later I used some of the cloth to make green plaid coats for May and Martha, and me a gray dress that I wore a long time. I trimmed my dress with black and had my picture taken in it. We had the cloth around and used it for some things during the next few years. Edwin wanted to move back to Utah. He was homesick and his folks kept writing for him to come. They were very lonesome, since they lost May. I was against moving. I was expecting my fourth baby, and just didn't feel like moving again. There were two or three families who wanted to move back also, and would soon be ready to leave, so there was nothing for me to do but go. We packed our things and sold our shop, bees, home and all we had. Mother decided that she would go with us. She packed all her things, but Father said that he had received a call from the church authorities and could not leave. He stayed there for 2 more years, then one of the general authorities came down and told Father that his place was with his family, so he was released to go back to Utah. He moved back to Ephraim and finished the house he had started before he left. It was conference time for our state the next Sunday, so we decided to stay over for it before we left for Utah. John Henry Smith was the visitor for the authorities. When he spoke, he asked the people to please stay there and help build that part of the country. He told them that they would be blessed if they did stay and be sorry if they didn't. We had already sold our home, so we had to leave. We moved to Utah in the fall of 1888. We arrived in Utah only to have Edwin decide he wanted to return to Arizona. I put my foot down. I would be having my baby soon, and I could not go all over the country anymore. We moved into part of Edwin's brother Albert's home. Edwin settled down and bought a water mill used to saw lumber. It took all we had, but there were no other mills around, and there was a lot of good timber on the mountains. We were doing well when the stream went dry, and we had to move farther up the mountain. We built a shack at the mill and lived there. Finally, when the mill was paid for, Edwin bought John out and moved everything into town. He bought a planing mill too. We moved into a part of X's home, where Ernest was born, and we stayed there for a while. When we returned to run the mill, John and Art went with us. The men could go hunting whenever they wanted to there. One day we had a lot of company and I didn't know what on earth to do. Edwin said to let John off from the sawmill so he could get a deer. We only killed them when we needed them. John was the best shot around. One time they wanted to go hunting on Sunday and I hid the bullets so they couldn't go. I hid 3 or 4 boxes, one in the middle of a roll of carpet rags, one in a straw mattress, and others around. We had a partially blind man, Edwin Johnson, who worked for us for years. He could see enough so he could chop wood, feed the engine, and keep a good fire going. He came in and found every one of those boxes of shells. They took them and went hunting after all. One of the highlights at the mill was company who came to see us. It wasn't often, but when they did come, it was a real treat, especially to the children, who would watch for wagons to come up the hill. When we lived at the mill in Dry Canyon in Utah, Eddie and May found a nest of little hawks. They raised and fed them, and trained them to come out of the mountains when they called. These hawks were the only pets they had. One day we knelt down to have family prayers while we were living at the first sawmill. Edwin asked John to say prayers. John started but was praying so low that Edwin couldn't hear him. Edwin had trouble with his hearing for years. Edwin again asked John to say prayers, and John just kept on praying. Edwin couldn't hear him. Finally, Edwin started in himself and prayed so loud that John had to quit. John was furious. Edwin would get his gun for protection and walk all night to get home to stay with his family over Sunday. One night Eddie was up to the mill with him and they started down. He sent Eddie on home and followed some deer tracks. Eddie heard him shoot and thought he would be home in a few minutes. We waited and waited after Eddie got home. Finally, we went to our neighbors, the Curtis family, to get them to help us look for Edwin. Some of them came to help us. Edwin finally came home. He had followed a deer, because he had just wounded it and he didn't want it to go off and die somewhere. When the children were old enough to go to school, we decided to build us a house in town. We hired 2 young fellows to build it. One was a carpenter and one a mason. Ed Snow, and Sarah's son, built at the same time we did. He had the nicest house in Mapleton and we had the next. Ed Snow was one of Edwin's dearest friends. He didn't have a brother that he thought more of than Ed. He was so glad when we moved back to Mapleton. Our house had to be built a little at a time. The first year they put up the walls and roof, next year the plastering and so on. A painter came up from San Pete and painted both houses. Our home was finished before Eldo was born in 1896. Lynn and Ralph had both been born in the old house that was right behind the new one. Minnie was born about 3 years later in the new house. Harriet Curtis, Edwin's sister, wanted to sell her store, and the man who ran the other store in town didn't want to give her very much. Edwin decided to buy it from her. We paid her $80 for the things she had left in the store and moved them into one room of our home before it was even finished. People came to buy it so fast that we bought more things and built shelves in our one room. Finally, our stock was so great that we built a little store next door to our house. We bought most of our goods from Provo and found we could go up to Salt Lake and order from ZCMI the things we couldn't get in Provo. It took a full day to go to Salt Lake. Most of the time I would go up on the train and order the things we needed, then come back on the train. Just before Lynn was born, I had to quit cooking at the mill and move into town because I was sick all the time. I was so hoarse and had such a bad throat that I couldn't speak above a whisper for several months before and after Lynn was born. The doctor kept my neck painted with iodine because I had such a bad goiter. I was also hoarse with Elda and Minnie, but not as bad. I had to whistle to the children when I wanted them, as I couldn't call them. I was very bad for months before Art was born in St. John's. I had a special blessing, and the day he was born I could talk aloud and never had any more serious trouble with hoarseness or goiter. The children all went to school in Mapleton and all passed with good grades. We had something going on all the time. Eddie had battles and armies all organized in school until they didn't know what to do with them. One time we had all our grain cut, and Edwin said he didn't know what to do with that 3 acres of grain. Eddie had all the kids from school come home with him and pile up the grain in one big shock. Edwin was so mad when he got home that he made them all unpile it. We had over 300 swarms of bees, and we sold truckloads of honey. The kids did most of the extracting. An old man who was kind of crazy came in and saw them emptying honey one day and said we could swim in honey. We sold lots of our honey to the Crandalls. In the spring our kids would go out with the crowd to work in the beet fields. They could earn some money that way. Sometimes I would take the train down to Ephraim to stay 2 or 3 days at a time to visit with my folks. They didn't come up very often. Father came and stayed with us when Eddie was sick with typhoid. He came 80 miles to administer to him because we wrote and asked him to. Mother came up and stayed with me when Ralph was born. My cousins came by to see us, but we had typhoid fever and they didn't dare stay. We went to see Aunt Dorothea and Cousin Mary, who lived in Ephraim. The 50th year celebration was being held in Salt Lake City. It was in 1898. We had decided we just didn't have time to go up. We were lying in the bed talking, and I told Edwin I wished we had gone up to the parade and celebration. Edwin told me we could still go by driving part of the night. We left right then with Eddie and the baby and camped out. Edwin had a sister, Emmeline, and she was in the parade because she was one of the original pioneers. She had lost her purse, and when the parade passed us she was tearing up the whole wagon to find it. They had the most beautiful fireworks that night that I had ever seen. When it was time to dedicate the Salt Lake Temple, we got tickets and went up. It was conference time. There was such a crowd that I couldn't imagine that many people around at one time. No one can know the dread of typhoid who didn't live through those times when we had it so bad. I got so I just dreaded autumn, as did everyone else. Eddie was 7 when he was so sick with typhoid he nearly died. He would have probably but Father came up from Ephraim and gave him a blessing. After about 3 years, Ernest had it. Ralph was the baby. We had to get Ernest up every day and dress him. He was so sick he couldn't sit up, but he would be dressed. All the water was rotten. Grandma Whiting walked all the way up to the big ditch in the middle of the night to get Ernest some water. After we moved into the new house, May had typhoid. Next year, Ralph had it. Almost 2 years later, Edwin had typhoid and Ralph got it again. They were both were in bed at the same time. Edwin had never been superstitious or imagined things, and he had never been unconscious during his illness, so we all knew he was conscious when his father came to him in August, 1900. No one will ever know how much I hated to leave my mother and father, who were getting old, and I was their only daughter. They had made two moves to live by us, but now they were too old to move again. So even though I knew there was no question about going, still my heart ached. We left the best house we ever had or would have. We were leaving my folks, who did not think they could stand to make another move, and who were sad to see us move so far away, especially my mother, who had moved up in the first place to be near me. We left all of our business, and sold them for what we could get. We left all of our family and friends, but we knew that we had to go, so we never hesitated. It took almost a year to sell everything and get ready to move. Edwin's brothers, Edgar and Art and families, decided to move with us, and also his brother Fred and his mother, and her granddaughter, Clara Curtis, who lived with her. That was quite a crowd to leave Mapleton, and the people hated to see us leave, especially some of our very close friends. About half the town decided to travel with us the first day and camp with us that night. When we decided to come back to Arizona, Eddie was 18, May 16, Martha 14, Ernest 12, Ralph 10, Lynn 8, Elda 5, and Minnie almost 2. It was just as hard for them to leave their friends as it was for Edwin and I. They had many friends and many cousins, of whom they were very fond. Our trip took quite a long time, because we were bringing all we hadn't sold in Mapleton. We had cattle, horses, wagons, and household furniture. When we arrived back in St. John's, we bought a house on Main Street and added on 3 more rooms. We put what little money we had, and every dollar we could get, into a store. We did our own freighting, and did everything else we could to build it up, and soon the store was going pretty good. Eddie was called to go on a mission soon after we got there. It nearly broke us. I had to send to my folks and borrow $100 right at first for him. They never would let me pay it back to them. Everyone in St. John's thought we had plenty. They didn't know what a hard time we were having. There were 3 big stores already in St. John's, Schuster's and Barth's, that had been going for years, and then there was the Co-op ACMI Arizona's branch of ZCMI. They really had all the business. We really had to work to get the money to send to Eddie on his mission. He was so saving because he knew what a hard time we were having. He went hungry many times. I used to put on sales and sell at cost if we needed to. We didn't go in debt, so we couldn't get very bad off. I would save all the empty shoe boxes and other things that were empty, and put them behind the full ones on the shelves just so it would look like we had more. Edwin would do all the other things, but he didn't like to clerk in the store. I started a small millinery shop. Mrs. Danny Patterson wanted to sell hers, so I bought it. Then I got some hats from St. Louis, and priced them so I could afford to lose some and not go broke. I bought a lot of hats from He Is Not Busy Davis' mother. I looked at all those hats and was sick. I knew there were more hats than heads in all that town. I loaded up a bunch and took them to Kongcho, and peddled them from house to house. Martha went with me. I sold the hats at reasonable prices, just enough to get my money out of them. Next I went up to Springerville selling hats. We sold one at nearly every house. While I was up there, Leonard Taylor Foster's son came on a horse to get me. He just cried when he tried to tell me what was wrong. Edwin was sick. He had been irrigating on the Chapman place, and had laid down and fallen asleep. When he awoke, he was ill. He had pneumonia, and nearly died with it. We had a good doctor there, Dr. Flemings. The drive came and sat up with me all night, to help take care of Edwin. He got better, but he wasn't very strong for months. In fact, he never was completely well after the typhoid spell, and this was hard on him. Edwin had just bought this land from the Chapmans, and had been farming a little while. He surely raised a pile of melons on it and some good gardens. We bought this after the dam went out and we'd sold our other land. We had purchased some land at the meadows just after we arrived in St. John's. Art and Eck did too, but they only stayed one winter then left losing it all. And Harriet Eck's wife hated to go back, because she liked it in St. John's. They had lost a little girl while there, and she hated to leave that little grave. Art and Eck stopped in Fruitland, New Mexico for a while. Harriet was terribly sick when they left. She didn't live long, and died while they were in New Mexico. Eck took his family then to Utah. He had a very hard time with a house full of little children. Grandma Whiting and her son, Fred, and granddaughter, Clara Burke, stayed in St. John's until her death. We had all our crops in on the land we had bought and the dam broke. It flooded a foot of dirt all over the whole field. We thought everything was gone, and that we would go broke for sure. Eddie was still on his mission and we just didn't know what to do. Ernest said, "You know, Pa, I'll bet corn will grow yet this summer." Edwin bought corn seed, borrowed corn planters, and turned the kids loose to plant acres of corn. There was Ernest, Ralph, and Leonard who planted it. When the weeds came up, Edwin said, "Well, boys, when you get those weeds out, we'll go fishing." They went fishing. That corn grew higher than the horses' heads. We had corn for our pigs, chickens, cornmeal, and all else we needed. We even let others harvest some on shares. The next year we planted barley at the meadows below St. John's. I went down there and cooked out on a campfire for a month while they harvested the barley. Joe Patterson and Stradlings all paid me to cook for them. Lots of other townspeople came down to harvest their grain or to work. I just went to help Edwin because I knew he wasn't well enough to manage alone. That barley was so high and we had so much, we had to fill the cellar under the store. We got a good cash price for it and that helped the store. Edwin helped build the dam in Greer Valley and we took up a section of land and farmed down there. That was good land, if you could have depended on the Little Colorado for water. Art was born in the house behind the store. He wasn't very old when we went to the meadows. One night he was cross and screamed so much that I was frightened. I couldn't find out what was wrong with him. My father had left a good log house on his place there and Edwin moved it up on our land. We dug a well and had water to use for drinking. Ike and Sine lived down there too. Well, I walked the floor with him for hours and he cried all night. I thought it must be an earache, but nothing I did seemed to help. The men were up at the Chapman place. Finally, I decided to take him over to see if Sine could help me. It was about a mile away. Leonard went with me because he didn't want me to go alone. Sine took Arthur and tended him until he finally dropped off to sleep. Well, in the morning we found a cornworm under the facing of his little shirt. There was a big place on his chest where the worm had eaten the flesh. He would doze off a few minutes, and then wake up and scream again. He was less than a year old then, but he has the scars to this day, on his chest. While we were living at Greer Valley, we decided to take a fishing trip. That was Edwin's favorite recreation. We were ready to go back to Greer Valley, so we stopped at the city ditch to water the horses. While Arthur and I were in the buggy, Edwin started to unhitch the tugs, so they could reach the water, I was holding the lions. One tug hit the horse's heel and they ran. We were driving the meanest horses around. I tried to turn the horses into the fence, as they ran and the wheel went over a big high gate in the ditch. I was sitting on the high spring seat and it threw me out. I went down behind the horses across the double trees, and was dragged across the road. William Barry ran out and thought it was Edwin who was hurt, because he was making such a fuss. Then they finally got to me and thought my eyes were out, because the skin had all been torn off my forehead, and was hanging down over my eyes. I thought I was blinded for sure. They took me to May's place. She lived just across the street. Someone finally put the skin back up over my forehead. They went for the doctor and he came and sewed it up just like it was. He didn't even dare to move the skin back down. I was surely lucky Dr. Roberts was there then, he was a good doctor. I stayed at May's place for a week or so until my head was healed some. For a long time after, the gravel would swell up and gather, and then break and sand and rocks would come out. Gradually I got so I could open my eye. Ernest used to console me by saying, "Never mind, Ma, you can wear dark glasses and it won't look so bad." Martha and May worked in the store, while we were in Greer Valley. What we had in stock we sold cheap enough, so that it moved and we could buy more stock. The men could hunt for antelope any time they wanted to then. That was always a good sport for them. Of course, they only got them when we needed some meat. One time Edwin was out for wood, and found a dead antelope with a little one laying to the side of it. He brought it home and the kids kept it for a pet quite a while. We took it to St. John's and they fed it a green alfalfa and it died. While we were there the children also had 9 little goats, and 27 lambs they got from the sheepherders around there. Ralph found a little coyote and the men thought they could gentle it but it just got meaner all the time. They kept it in an old well someone had started to dig. Finally we had to let it go to a man who wanted it for a circus. We also had turkeys and lots of chickens. We milked cows and made pounds and pounds of cheese that we kept for the winter. We also made lots of butter. I guess I was like May more than any of the girls. Martha was more like my mother. She looked like her because her eyes were dark. I looked more like father. My complexion was like him and I was larger than my mother. When all the others in town were selling their land in Greer Valley, we also sold ours to some men from Denver. In 1911, we turned our attention to the mountains, where we had the homesteads and sawmills. It was there we started our sawmill with Herbert and May. Ernest went on his mission, and John Whiting, Uncle Charles' boy, came up from Mexico to work on the mill. Herbert and May had been married October 4, 1905. The railroad always cut their rates at conference time so all the couples would get married then and go to Salt Lake to the temple, while the rates were on. May and Herbert went to Salt Lake with Will and Annie Freeman. I felt worse when May got married than Annie. I thought I couldn't stand it, I missed her so much. She was always the one who would help me tend the babies. Martha always helped with the housework, especially if I had company. May would hide out. Eddie came back from his mission and married soon after on June 6, 1906. They went to Salt Lake on the train, too. Eddie took over the store after he was married, so we stayed at the mill most of the time in the summer after that. Martha and Frank were married just a while later. That was 3 in a year. Before Eddie took over the store, he farmed in Greer Valley and lived down at the Meadows for a while. Ralph helped me in the store after they were all married. He was real good. Then I hired Katie Waite too. She worked there for about 2 years. Martha and Frank went to Salt Lake with Joy and Josie Patterson. I was just lost after they were gone. I only had the 2 little girls to help me. Ralph and Zella were married next in 1911. They went to Salt Lake with Maurice Robin and Katie Waite. I missed Ralph in the store. He helped in the sawmill after they came back and lived in a little house by us. We went to the mill early this year, because it had been such a good winter. March was so nice. Then the snow came in June, and I do mean snow. I don't think there was ever a year like that one. Oh, dear. Haven't we had our ups and downs? But we've forgotten them now. New ones come along and we forget the old ones. The boys went to Texas and bought a lot of cattle, and shipped them home on the railroad to Navajo. They drove them to St. John's, but the cattle were hungry and there wasn't much feed around there, so they drove them on up to the mill. There was plenty of grass in the mountains, but within about a week it began to snow and it kept right on. The cows couldn't even find the grass, or the ground. They ate pine needles and lost their calves. Then the cows got sick and died, like flies. Herbert made harnesses for them and they would go around and lift them up. We finally sold the cattle to the Candelarias just in time so we didn't go completely broke. It took all we had left, and all the cattle we had before to pay for them. Ernest would sing so loud and would make up songs about the different cows that were sick and dying. He had them all named, and we all had to laugh just to listen to him. The rest of the family was so blue, and so discouraged I guess we'd have died, if that kid hadn't sung so loud. Frank Whiting was teaching school in Kongcho and Beryl came up to visit her sister, his wife Winnie. They came over to St. John's often. Ernest came down from the mill and his hair was long and scraggly. He met Beryl for the first time and she was all dolled up. They went together for about a year. Her folks lived in El Paso. Ernest met her there where they were married, then they traveled to Salt Lake to the temple. Ernest and Beryl moved to the mill and ran it for several years. Lynn was married just before the war broke out. He and Gladys got married here, and went to Salt Lake to the temple at the next conference. Gladys was very young. Elda and Albert were also married in St. John's at our home, by David K. Udall, and then went the next week to the temple in Salt Lake, March 19, 1919. I told Eddie, Elda was going to be married, and said she would have to quit work and he said, for heaven's sakes, who to? We all laughed as they had gone together off and on since Elda was 9. Art and Armino were married just before he went on his mission. They tried to get Armina to wait, but she said she wanted to be sure of him. Min and Don were married in the Mesa Temple. I went back to Utah on the train 3 times, to see my folks after we moved here to Arizona. Twice I went alone and once I took Minnie. Mother had passed on the last time and father was alone. Aunt Mime, my sister-in-law, kept house for hers and had a baby. I could only stay 30 days on my ticket, so I stayed right with father. He had to sit there alone, and wait for Mart to come and put him to bed, and to get him up in the morning. One of Mart's boys would stay with him nights. The first time, when I took Minnie, I went to Salt Lake City, to Mapleton and Springville and then back to Ephraim. The second time I went I stayed for 30 days. I just spent my time with my parents, kept house and helped fix clothes, visited, and so on. I saw my cousins and neighbors. When mother died I was real sick and so I couldn't go. When father died I didn't get the wire until after he was buried. I always felt sad not to have been at either of my parents' funerals. Ike was out of town, so neither of us went. It was while we were living at the first mill in Arizona, that one of the worst tragedies that ever happened in our family took place. John Whiting, Edwin's brother Charles Boy, was living with us and working at our mill. He was such a fine young man. One day just a while before they were to quit for noon John got caught in the saw and it sawed right across the middle of him. Herbert rushed horseback to the dam and phoned from there. Dr. Bolden came partway in a car that belonged to the Denver men. Then they went the rest of the way on horses. The doctor sewed him up and he lived a few days but he suffered so that it was awful. The doctor stayed there and kept giving him medication to stop the pain. We sent word to Charles, but he had to come all the way from Mexico and he didn't get there until after John died. It was so hard on him and on all of us. While we were still at the sawmill near Kitchen Spring, a family came to work there. They had a big mean dog that all the men were afraid of. One day the wife came over and the dog followed her. Arthur was about 9 then. Edwin sent him down to the shop to turn off the water to the boiler. When he got to the engine room, the dog attacked him. Noah Connolly came running and broke the dog's back with a club, but not before it chewed Arthur in 21 places. Herbert sent the dog's head to Phoenix and word came back that the dog had rabies. We took him to Los Angeles on the train for treatments. That was the closest place they gave them. When we got on the train, everyone would ask what was the matter with our boy, and when we told them, they were all afraid of him. No one wanted to sit by a boy who had been bit by a mad dog. When we got to Los Angeles, Willard and Louis Farr were living there and he took us to a doctor, who he said was real good. That was our first meeting with Dr. Tibbetts and we surely came to know him and like him. He did so much good for our family until his death. We had to stay there for 21 days. Those treatments were so painful and were hard on Arthur. Herbert wanted to sell because things were slow. He wanted to go to school, so he and May went to Chicago. Frank and Martha were already there. Effie and Mary were little girls. After Ernest came home from his mission and was married, he took over the mill. We moved back to St. John's and began raising chickens and gardening, and we got more bees. Edwin had the best garden in town. Some university men came and looked it over and gave him an award for his work. We made the best living we ever had, because we could handle these things and take care of it ourselves. We also had milk cows and a big barn. Edwin milked a cow for years. He had his blacksmith shop, just a small one in the back of the lot, where he fixed things for himself and the boys. Edwin used to get faint when he was hungry, so he would often come in for a snack between meals. He would come in and say, "Mariah, don't you have a pound of clabber?" We both enjoyed clabber so much that we were glad to milk our old Jersey cow as long as possible and have the good thick sour cream on top. We always enjoyed working with the bees during these years. After Edwin was unable to do much, only to watch us, Elda and her family used to help me, as they had done for years. I was always glad to have fresh honey and honeycomb to take to my neighbors. After we moved back from the mill, I used to enjoy visiting with Money Jolly. We have always managed through the years to see each other as often as possible. I had always been so busy in the store and with all else that I had never had the time to go visiting and enjoy my neighbors before. After Charles and his family moved here from Mexico, I enjoyed visiting with Verona so much. She was always such good company. Of course, we were glad that we moved to Arizona. Edwin always felt that our family had been blessed here. We had answered the call of the church authorities. The most important thing in our lives was the church. I never was much of a leader or a teacher, but I always did what they asked me to and served in every position I was called, as best I could. Of course, Edwin read a lot and knew so much more about the gospel than I did, but I liked to study all I could about the scriptures, and Edwin read a lot to me and he was always explaining things to me. I worked in primary the most and enjoyed that. I liked the Relief Society and went whenever I could. I was a visiting teacher for a long time. One time, while we were living in Utah, I had a visiting partner, who was a real good friend of mine. We went teaching together one day and she said, "I just hate to go to this place. They are Danish, their house is dirty and smells so bad. I believe it smells Danish." I listened a while and then said, "I never noticed. Maybe I can't tell because I'm Danish." That friend was so embarrassed. She apologized and tried to make it up to me the rest of the time we lived in Utah. Edwin always wanted me to wear brighter colors and fix up more. I was afraid of being too stylish. He always said he wanted to buy me an eiderdown or a lace dress. He wanted me to have bright red or some other colors that were bright, with fancy patterns. I had always worn mostly gray and brown. I had never worn black. That was only for funerals and deaths. I didn't want to dress like that. But when I got older, I got some black dresses. I had always wanted short hair when I was young, but mother and father didn't think I should. Soon after I was married, I had my hair cut short and wore it that way for years. I let it grow for a long time, but it never got long like it was when I was married. Our family has really been blessed. I can't help wondering what it would have been like had we stayed in Utah, but I'm sure that the Lord has blessed us because we moved to Arizona.